Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for attending our session today. As mentioned, I'll be talking about the perinatal periods of risk model and applying our study in Native American deaths in the Pacific Northwest to illustrate that method. As stated by the other presenters, I have no relationships to disclose. And I'd like to cite all the contributors that have been part of our collaborative work group in developing this research and distributing results to the community, particularly Shira Rutren, who's here in the audience today, and Eva Wong, who's been continuously supportive and integral in the analysis. So in looking at the background of infant mortality among Native Americans, there is a persistent increase in illness and mortality among Native Americans, and infant mortality additionally follows this trend across the country. The Census Bureau has ranked Washington and Oregon as 11th in the nation in terms of some health characteristics, including infant mortality, while Idaho falls to 15th. Despite these relatively high ratings, Native American infants are twice as likely to die before 1 year within this region. Some proposed risk factors include their highest risk for unintentional injury inversely proportionate with their birth weight, two times higher SIDS rate, very low or low birth weight, accounting for approximately 43% higher infant mortality, and elevated rates of prematurity and respiratory distress, also leading to excess deaths. Some unique research challenges with this population include relatively small population size and extreme cultural diversity across the country and across the region. Regional analysis is thus necessary to obtain adequate population numbers and to address cultural diversity on a smaller scale. Additionally, the Pacific Northwest in particular represents a relatively well studied region for infant mortality and allows for result comparisons with previous literature. Our overall study aim was to examine excess fetal and infant deaths among this population for the years 2000 to 2004. We performed a population-based retrospective cohort study in which birth, infant, and fetal death certificate data from the states was analyzed in aggregate. Our method is unique in that it's very clearly defined. The perinatal periods of risk model was developed by the WHO and used in developing countries, and then beginning in 1997, CDBET developed it for using with marginalized populations within the U.S. It's unique in that it's a very standardized methodology. It uniquely identifies potential groups in, gaps in infant mortality prevention and provides results that are very simply communicated to community partners. It also locally determines benchmarks using local and internal reference groups, which can control for standardizing social and political influences, and eventually hopes to mobilize communities to action in this area. This is a diagram of the map that is resulting from the PPOR methods. Unlike other approaches in infant mortality, PPOR looks to include both fetal and infant deaths. Fetal development is included as it's part of the continuum, and the determination of fetal versus infant death can be subjective and is not consistently made across states or regions. Furthermore, fetal deaths and some infant deaths have similar causes and thus similar prevention methods. As you can see, the PPOR method defines age at death by, including fetal death, which is death over 24 weeks to birth, neonatal, which is up to 28 days, and postneonatal, which is 28 days to 1 year. On the left-hand side, there's division by birth weight, very low birth weights, and over 1,500 grams. The color-coding boxes suggest different preventative strategies depending on where the highest risks fall. The rates are calculated for areas or populations and are then compared to a local reference group with optimal fetal and infant outcomes. The typical reference group, as was cited by some of the previous presenters, is white non-Hispanic mothers over 20 years of age and with 13 or more years of education. The results do not imply causal relationships in this method and allow for grouping in broad categories that can direct preventative efforts. They also are needed to correct underlying risk factors and allow for some targeted resource allocation. There's two different phases in this type of method. Phase one looks at excess deaths in fetal and infant mortality within each period, while phase two explores more in-depth risk factors and specific contributors. Here you can see some potential intervention strategies depending on where your highest risk numbers fall. The maternal and maternal health and prematurity focuses on preconception health, health behaviors, social determinants of health, and perinatal care. Maternal care on prenatal care and higher risk obstetric care. Newborn care in NICU, primarily NICU and pediatric surgeries, and then infant health, focusing on sleeping position, breastfeeding, and injury prevention. Our inclusion criteria were defined by the PPOR method again. We included all fetal and infant deaths occurring within 1 year of birth. All deaths were limited to weight over 500 grams. Fetal deaths were defined as those over 24 weeks to eliminate any inconsistencies in state reporting. Neonatal deaths are any live birth up to the first 28 days. And then the post-neonatal again from 28 days to 1 year. Fetal deaths were not meeting these criteria, and those ending in elective termination or spontaneous abortion were also excluded as being non-viable pregnancies. The denominator used in calculating all of our rates includes all fetal deaths and live births occurring over the first 5 year time period. Our study population was quite large. There you can see 700,000 odd. There were over 6,000 fetal and infant deaths included for the PPOR analysis, and our reference group was used as an internal reference group, but we used the standard definition defined by CityMatch. And there you can see the numbers of Native American and our reference group. In the demographics of our population, you can see that the Native American group was markedly different from our reference group. Some of these factors that are not mentioned for the reference group were because of the definition of our reference group that we used. Maternal age, Native American mothers tended to be significantly younger and less educated. In terms of tobacco use, our Native population, again, is markedly higher, and alcohol use is also elevated. Prenatal care also tended to be attained later and with less visits. And I just want to note that this variable data on substance use in prenatal care was only available for Washington and Oregon. So our phase one results, looking at the excess fetal and infant mortality rates, shows that an overall excess rate for fetal and infant mortality of 7.3 per 1,000 live births. The overall rate for the region was 8.1, the reference rate 5.7, and our native rate was 13.0. This was the largest rate compared to the reference group of any racial population that we looked at. And here you can see how the breakdown of rates occurs. On the left, the native rates are highest for maternal health and prematurity, as well as infant health. And in taking consideration the reference group, we have the excess rates with the number of deaths. The highest contributors, as mentioned, were the infant health, and we'll talk more about the recommendations for those for that period momentarily. The birth weight distribution for Native infants was also consistent with that seen among the reference group, though more Native infants died in the postnatal period. The reference group infants, on the other hand, died at the other end of the spectrum in the maternal health and prematurity period. Here you can see the excess fetal and infant mortality rates. You can clearly see that the native death rates for infant health outpace any other group in that area. And the The maternal health and prematurity in the fuchsia color is similarly elevated. And this is in comparison to the reference. Our phase two methods looked at the Kitagawa analysis was examining that maternal health and prematurity focus, the contribution of birth weight versus age at death, while we looked at infant health to examine causes and classification of death codes for prevention in the post-neonatal stage, and this was limited to infants over 2,500 grams. Our results in this area were that native infants showed elevated mortality within the rate, with 76% of the deaths occurring at high birth weights. This can be attributed and is congruent with previous findings that macrosomia among Native American populations can be potentially related to elevated rates of gestational diabetes. Further analysis of this birth weight group over 2,500 grams is also necessary within this population to examine this influence and the influence of maternal health as a contributing risk factor. In regards to the infant health results, we found a 5-time greater rate of death within the post-neonatal period. Highest causes were related to infection, injury, and ill-defined or other external causes. SIDS was also found to be a significant contributor. And here again, you can see how dramatically the native population deaths outpaces the other different racial groups, specifically in infections, injury, and ill-defined, with the SIDS following it forth. Some implications based on the PPOR method are focusing on preconceptional health, health behaviors such as tobacco and alcohol use, and perinatal care. We also would like to promote expanding strategies in these areas to focus on social factors and particularly racism and stress within the native populations. In terms of infant health, looking at sleeping position, breastfeeding, injury prevention, and care for conditions and chronic conditions is recommended, as well as finding a medical home. There were some limitations to this study. Among them, the usual problems in looking at birth and linked death data. There were also some new difficulties in and challenges in linking and using, the different cohorts that were developed by the states. Some developed birth cohorts while others developed death cohorts, and it's unknown currently what the limitations of that may be in combining the different types of cohorts. What is also unique to Native American populations is the racial misclassification that continues in vital statistics data. It is often addressed as a barrier in epidemiologic studies and consistently results in underestimates of disease-related morbidity and mortality. Some death and birth certificate data estimates up to a third of Native Americans are misclassified as either white, Hispanic, Asian, what have you. And then in defining gestational age based on the clinical estimate of gestational age rather than last menstrual period or a clinical, clinically derived estimate. So our next steps, we'd like to promote the continued prevention efforts in preconceptional, periconceptional, and post-neonatal health, particularly in injury prevention. We'd also recommend continued surveillance in terms of other research methods. Fetal and infant mortality reviews can be vital in looking at this population and providing context of what the numbers actually mean within these populations and communities. Investigation of injury-related deaths is, in particular, is necessitated in regards to the 5 times higher rate among this population in our findings. And also looking at PRAMS data, as some of our colleagues are doing currently in analyzing stressful life events and social support, which is being looked at in Washington and Oregon. And then finally, focusing focus groups on members of the communities themselves and looking at pregnancy and postpartum outcomes. Currently, we are also looking at distributing these results to the communities in which the data was collected from, and allowing those communities to do what they will with the results, and leading the kind of the next push for how the results will be disseminated and how we will engineer the follow-up. And that's it.
I want to thank all the speakers for some excellent presentations, and we have about 15 minutes for discussion, so I don't know if the speakers want to come up, and we could entertain some questions from the audience. Yes?
I'm interested in the impact of alcohol and other drugs, excluding tobacco, on infant mortality, and I wonder if any of the speakers could address that, particularly alcohol being
any of you want to respond to that?
Let me talk a little bit.
Sure.
Actually, our study, when we look at the alcohol, a lot of missing things. So the 5% of the data is really missing. So we didn't use this linked data to do this study, but we did look at it and use our print data. So it did show, actually, you know, the smoking and drinking, it may cause some factor associated with the actually preterm birth. And but again, the prime data are not directly linked to the, you know, infant death. So they have to, through some indirect, probably conclude on that. But that's a very good thing. We've been looking into that. The only thing right now, we don't use the birth linked to death because a lot of amazing things. But we did use our prime data.
Okay, another question?
We have not done that so far in terms of the environmental, but what we're doing is identifying anything that would affect them. We have a very active neonatal group of physicians that comes up with all the different things that would prevent any kind of both environmental and so forth and so on. That would affect any of those indicators that we've done, but that particular thing would be interesting to bring into their next group. Marty?
Yeah, we can bring that to Dr. Hendricks, who's the chief of neonatology of our RPC at Bell and other district, because she does a lot of research, and I can bring that to her, because she does a lot of research at NYU.
Other questions? I had a question for Consuelo. In the slides that you showed, it seemed like the babies were sleeping kind of on their sides. Is that the recommendation for very preterm? Or?
No, we do it on the side or mm-hmm. on the back, and we position them every hour or on the half hour. Again, identifying the types of infant gestation and so forth and so on. It's very interesting because each of those nurses who went through the courses and physicians are so attuned to it that they know when to turn the baby or position them. And again, as I said, depending on gestational, we use a lot of gel type thing on the sides and on the back. So the the infant would feel that they're still within the wound, and then as they gained weight, we slowly wean them off it, which I thought is interesting. And Mafti is here, she's one of the maternal in charge, but the director for Bellevue Hospital, which is really one of the premier in terms of moving this initiative forward. And we've gotten a lot of people or NICU who have called us and asked us to assist them roll this out. By the way, this is a very expensive endeavor because just buying all these little baby bumpies and the cozy, you know, type of thing. And what we do is we reuse them and we get money from foundations to support us, just to get us on the initial thing. And then after that, we sort of like get our reusable to keep on going.
Other questions? I had a, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, we just rolled that out 2 months ago. Our Department of Health has asked us and to do a educational training to all of our, again, post and prenatal physicians and nurses, so that when we discharge the infant, if we, the social worker assess that they are poor and cannot afford a crib, the Department of Health gives them not really a crib, but something that you put next to the bed to prevent bed sharing. So that's one of the things that we have followed in our indicators, that all of the mothers who are discharged and who come in for their 1 month follow-up, that we make sure that they're not only trained, but we give them that little container, it's not a crib, to put either, you know, by the chair or something, as long as it's not with the mother.
Okay.
I think specifically in looking at Native populations, we often go back to those very broad social determinants of health and their effects that are exerted on the communities rather than the community's ability individually to deal with them. And again, specifically looking at racism, stress on the mother, stressful life events, and things like that.
Also in Mississippi, you know, from our friends that I show a lot of the mother actually unwanted pregnancy. You know, the pregnancy unwanted, they're less likely actually to have the care, a lot of things. Another effect actually, CDC, they send a team to Mississippi because, you know, we are ranked the highest in the nation. So they look at our infant mortality from different angles. They look at the birth weight specific, you know, the standardized the national level. They actually, our rate, instead of 10.5, it decreased to 8.1. So it's also, you know, kind of the background, we have a highest percentage of African American, just from the way actually you look at it.
Yeah.
One of the issues that Dr. Kamath, who worked on our study, she does a lot of international work and has actually found incidences where countries just don't report their infant mortality accurately. And I'm not saying anything about whether the U.S. infant mortality is being reported accurately, but but she's found some failure to disclose in other countries where she's done international work. I don't think that explains the discrepancy, but certainly is another component of what we see.
Other questions? I had a question for Dr. Hurley. I thought your study was really very interesting. There's always this problem with a retrospective study versus a prospective study, and you mentioned this, maybe the ventilated infants looked better at birth. There was some reason why the decision was made to resuscitate them, which could also be linked to their better outcomes. And, we may be just at the limits of our data and what we can do with this type of data, but are there any things that you could control for that would help with that? Control for APGARs, control for birth weight, if there's differences between providers. I don't know what all is in your data set, but I just was thinking about it.
We actually were wondering the way, and we're glad you asked that question, because the way the ventilation variable is set up is either there's just nothing there, or it's less than 30 minutes and greater than 30 minutes. And when we were reviewing this with Dr. Kamath, she was like, well, it doesn't make sense. That baby must have been resuscitated because their APGAR went from 5 to, 9. But that has not been previously reported in the literature, a change in APGAR. And we felt like we would have been cherry-picking,
right.
That person was probably resuscitated and it just wasn't put in the data set. And we felt like that wasn't good science. So we have not, we considered doing a change in APGAR as a surrogate for ventilated or not, but didn't feel that we could stand on firm ground. I think trying to evaluate this in a prospective manner, and I think there's a lot of interest at the University of Colorado to possibly look at this looking forward, because there is this dilemma. And even when I presented my data as a general internist, there was obviously a lot of variability in the room about what the individual physicians working at the same institution were willing to do. And so I think looking forward, across Colorado to see what's happening would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Sure.
One of the things that we have also at the health and hospitals are task forces, and we have the radiology task force and the neonatal. And one of the things that they looked at are the radiation emission for PEDS patient and the number that they use. So we really do not have a hard data that I can tell you, but right now the two of them are discussing things that would limit the exposure, and unless it's a necessity, and one of the things that they are looking at are guidelines as to when necessary CT scans and exposure of the neonates. We actually have identified the type and the amount of radiation for each of the individual infants by groups, so that it would be standardized and identify what types of effects. And I also run the radiology directors, which are focusing on. There's a huge article in terms of gentle exposure. It's a very interesting article for little neonates. It just came out, a month ago, that we've sent to all of our neonatal and also to the radiologists across the corporation.
Any other questions?
Could I ask?
Oh, sure.
I was just curious about, trying to define the nature of the infant deaths that you're seeing.
Can you speak louder?
Yeah, sure.
I'm
okay, sorry.
I
I was curious about trying to define the nature of the ill-defined. I actually have a two-part question, and what strategies have you all thought of trying to investigate that, like the ill, you know, that huge population of ill-defined deaths? Did everybody hear my question?
She's asking about the cause of death, ill-defined deaths, that was in the American Indian study.
Michael, do you see that that's a common problem in trying to define it with the PPR?
You need to speak louder, too.
Sorry.
Can you come to the mic?
That's a common problem that we see in looking at cause of death data with the post-neonatal time period. And with our method in using PPOR, we're not specifically. We get some general hints on what are causes of death, but we're not looking. Further research needs to be done in finding out what they expressly are. On the other hand, in looking at cause of death data, I think there's kind of a wide, depending on the region and even the state, there's differences in how those are being defined. So I think that continues to be a challenge in looking at that ill-defined group.
I just have one last question, and I'll ask it there to prevent the flurry of.
So, and my other question to you, you mentioned that you were looking at getting the community involved and how to deal with this information. I was wondering if any of those efforts have already been initiated, and if they have, how they've been received.
So, they were, we have done various things in involving the communities, and part of that is from the inception of the project, involving collaborative work groups that encompasses a number of different Native groups, including the Seattle Indian Health Board, the Urban Indian Health Institute, and you saw the extensive list of contributors there. In addition, there's some community groups that are involved. The Native Women's Infant Dialogue Group in Seattle is a community-based organization that is able to disseminate results and bring back context to our to validate and contextualize our numbers. I don't know, Shira, if you have any other comments on that.
Any last questions before we close? I want to thank the speakers again. It's a very excellent presentation. Thank you.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I am the moderator of the next session.
Wonderful.
How does it work here?
Okay.
Is there something special?
Click to exit. Okay.
Click to exit, and then will there be already when they say next presentation there? Is already this
no,
is American
so.
Indian.
This is other resume. see the my last speaker didn't show up.
Uh huh.
So, but if we do this, maybe it'll just.
Let's see. Maybe we'll.